Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Monday. Let's talk some football. John McClain joins us now from Houston. John, how you doing?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. In all your years of covering the NFL, have you always made a big deal about how many interceptions the quarterback threw in training camp? Right. Because it seems to be a running theme here in Nashville right now.
I don't give a rat's you know what how many interceptions a quarterback throws the first week of training camp. Never have and never will.
I love it. So is everybody making a big deal about C.J. Stroud down there?
Oh, they make a big deal out of Stroud, sure, because Stroud – is coming off of terrible playoffs, and everybody's been making a big deal out of him since then, ever since they got to the off-season program. So, yeah. And if he they keep track on 7-on-7, 9-on-7, 11-on-11. So, yeah, all his stats are out there. But that's just because this is his fourth season. He's looking at a contract extension in the 50 or 100 million neighborhood.
Now, when do you expect that to happen? Is that a, you know, imminent thing, or is that something that they would wait until after the season?
I thought before it'd be after the season, he'd have to prove himself. But last week when they started camp and Nick Caserio did his annual State of the Texans, he said they were talking, and I was thinking, if he didn't think they're going to get a deal done, why talk about it? Adam Schefter put out there 2 months ago he thought they'd get it done, and for him to do that tells me he's talking to one of two or both of two involved. That'd be agent David Mulligetta or general manager Nick Caserio.
Talking to John McClain on the Chase and Big Joe Show. John, I know camp started, we're talking football, but this oddness around the Kyle Shanahan wreck just is still lingering. I mean, could this affect the team and affect, you know, there's a guy helping him out, coach going on? Is this a matter that just needs to be pushed aside, or is this something that's going to linger to the season for the Niners?
Well, nobody knows for sure. They said he should be ready. He's got Clay Kubiak, Gary's middle son, calling plays. Clay's very involved in the game day. Well, the preparation and the game day operation, as Shanahan's eye in the sky, so to speak. So, yeah, but I mean, I would expect Kyle Shanahan to be running the show again by the time the regular season rolls around.
Well, good, because I'm glad he's okay. That was just a kind of a weird story. I saw news today, John, that go back to 2014, that Jadeveon Clowney might be coming back to the Texans.
Yep, he signed with the Texans. He's coming back. They needed depth at defensive end behind Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. Clowney last season led the Cowboys with 8.5 sacks, 12 tackles for loss, and he had 22 pressures, and he was fifth in the NFL in pressure rate, even though he only played in 13 games and 379 snaps. And Clowney's always been better against the run than he has been as a pass rusher, which is one reason he's never had 10 sacks in a season. He's had 9, 9.5, 8.5 last year, so they're happy to get him. He lives here. He had multiple teams pursuing him. He's a mercenary. He takes his time to see who makes the best offer. And he came back to Houston. Let me tell you, people here are pumped. He never should have been traded. Two of the worst trades in Texans history were engineered by Bill O'Brien. Mm. And neither had a thing to do with playing. They had to do with the fact that Jadeveon Clowney and DeAndre Hopkins used to do things that irritated him, like be 2 minutes late to a meeting or something. And so he got rid of him in terrible deals, and now Clowney's back. And Hopkins just started coaching at Georgia Tech as a GA.
That's great. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, did it ever reach its full potential? And had it reached its full potential, how dominating could that have been?
Well, they were together for 5 years, and they were dominating, and that's one reason Texans went to the playoffs so much and won playoff games to get to the divisional round. Now let me think about Clowney came in 14, White came in 11. Clowney's first year was ruined by microfracture surgery on his knee and two subsequent operations. So healthy, if they'd have both been healthy together for those 5 years, Texans might have been able to advance farther than they did.
Talking to John McClain, speaking of J.J. Watt, you know, the news came out last week with Tony Romo and all his stuff going on. He's on a leave of absence from CBS. So J.J. will elevate and work with Jim Nance on the number one team. What's kind of been your thoughts on – you dealt with him every day as, you know, when he was a player and you a media member. How do you think he's done on this side of things, and how do you think he'll be with the number one?
I thought he did a great job last year with that Eagle. He was tremendous. Everybody praised him. I didn't hear any criticism. He did really well when he was in the studio show. And J.J.'s not afraid to be critical. He doesn't take cheap shots, and he's very analytical, and he's got a great personality. He's going to succeed at anything he does, except maybe owning a soccer team like Burnley. And I think that Romo's not going to get that first-team job back. Andrew Marchand from The Athletic, who's the one that's broken the story on all that, and he talked about, and I think Mike Florio's been all over this too, you have morals clause. And they found out a lot of things that happened when he got the driving, where I can't remember what they called it. And he didn't tell the truth. And so if they want to get rid of him and fight him over a settlement of $72 million that is still owed him of his $180 million, they could probably do it. Or they could bring him back and drop him down to a different level, because he has not been as good since he signed that $180 million contract. And a lot of people are saying, well, he isn't as good because the longer he's out of the game, the less he knows about it. Because he got so much money, it doesn't look like he's worked as hard to prepare where he can predict things based on alignment, which he was great at, and now he's not.
John McClain with us on the show. We'll have more with him coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Home of John McClain, too. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Monday. John, do you ever have those moments where you have something in your head and then as you're supposed to open your mouth and say it, you just totally forget it? That's exactly what just happened to me. So
yeah, that happens to me, and that's what happens when you get old. Unfortunately, it happens more and more.
I just had one of those moments. What I was going to ask, you know Clint Kubiak very well, obviously. You know, his dad was there, and now he's the head coach with the Raiders. What's kind of your thoughts on how he's handling things with the quarterback situation? Because I agree that Kirk Cousins should probably be the day one starter and let Fernando Mendoza take his time and not be rushed into it. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think the Raiders, if Mark Davis can stay out of making any dumb decisions and leave it to general manager John Spytek, who was with the Broncos under Gary Kubiak when they won Super Bowl 50 and then won a Super Bowl in Tampa when he was with Tom Brady, and let him continue to run the show with advice from Tom Brady, that team's headed in the right direction. Clint is like his dad. He's quiet, and people think, oh, man, he's not going to be tough enough. But when you watch him reaming players out at practice for mistakes, and it's one of those coaches where you don't want to let him down. He won't chew people out. He won't say anything negative in the media. A lot of times the media and the fans will get mad because he won't be honest when they lose, wanting him to take shots at the team. That's not Perry. That's not Clint. It's not going to be Clay, who should be a head coach next year after being the 49ers offensive coordinator. And when you're a young team like they have, that is appreciated. And I think Kirk Cousins, who he knows very well from coaching at Minnesota, is a really smart move. There's a lot of great quarterbacks, starting with the minority partner with the Raiders, who didn't play as a rookie, and like Patrick Mahomes, like Tony Romo, like Aaron Rodgers. There's a lot that didn't. And I think if you're stepping in and you're a Ben Roethlisberger and you're drafted low and you play 10 games and you win them all, that's because you were fortunate to be selected by a really good team. Well, Fernando Mendoza was not.
That's right. Talking to John McClain on the Chase the Big Joe Show. John, I'm loving this drama in Tampa with Baker Mayfield. I mean, I just – that's a very good football team. Now you got the Vita Vey incident that's going on. He wants more money, be traded. Now the Baker Mayfield. I mean, just, you go to camp and you got all these problems when you got a football team that could be really good come together. How do you see the Baker Mayfield thing impacting this team?
I don't think it'll impact anything negative. It doesn't matter what they say at this time of year. They can act like their PP hurts all the time because they're not getting a contract they want. But the fact is, the big money does not start till the regular season starts. I think they'll get their contracts worked out. They're not a team that has a lot of contract issues. Baker has been offered, according to reports, a little more than $100 million on a two-year deal.
Right.
He wants guaranteed, and he'd like another year. I'm guessing they'll compromise. He's probably asking for four, give him three, keep this year. And, you know, he was hurt a lot last year. And they were not as good. Carolina won their division with an 8-9 record. But when I'm picking divisions, I start with the quarterbacks. And I would take Baker Mayfield over any quarterback in that division.
I'm with you on that. I just, the drama just sometimes, like, God, what are we doing here? Come together. I really like that NFC South. I know the Saints signed Chris Olave to that nice deal, and there's something working there in New Orleans that really people thought last year, John, to be terrible, but with Tyler Shuck, and now there's a little momentum in New Orleans. That's a team to watch out. At least I think so. They came here, pounded the Titans last year, which doesn't say a lot, but I just like what's happening in New Orleans in the NFC South.
Joe, they're in the right division. Any team could win it if Michael Penix could get healthy and stay healthy. If Tua Tagovailoa could play like he did 3 years ago when he was tremendous. Sometimes that change of scenery is good, but I still like Mayfield. I still don't understand why they let Mike Evans get away. The
right.
Greatest offensive player in team history, right up there with Derek Brooks as the greatest player in Buccaneers history. It's just going to be weird seeing Mike Evans in a 49ers uniform. But the division is bad enough where any team could win it. That's why all the fans ought to be excited.
Yeah, I agree. John, some of the early lines in Vegas talk about coaches on the hot seat lose their job. And I don't like to spend a whole lot of time about coaches need to be fired. But Aaron Glenn is number one, running away with what's going on. John, can anybody win in New York with that owner?
It's really hard because Woody Johnson is involved in a lot of decisions. People don't realize how closely involved he is, and he should not be. And people talk about all those draft choices they've got. Man, they're going to turn it around. Well, 1 year they had three number one picks, including Chad Pennington, and they got better, but they didn't do anywhere near what they could have done or what another team could have done in that position. So I don't know. You know, Woody Johnson's not just going to have a lobotomy and not be involved. I mean, that's the way they operate there. I don't know how many games Aaron Glenn would have to win in his second year to keep his job, but he's under a lot of pressure. And they're like, Geno Smith is the answer till they get the rookie next year.
Right.
Number one, there's no guarantee they're going to get the right one next year, and there's no guarantee Geno's going to be any good. And if he is, that just hurts them when it comes to getting that next quarterback. They should have gone with the worst quarterback they could find.
What do you think it worked with Rex Ryan, though, to the best of its ability? But they got to two AFC championship games.
They did, and they beat the Patriots, and Rex is a great defensive coach. Rex did a tremendous job they're still my all-time favorite Hard Knocks team when the Jets and Rex were on there. But a little of Rex can go a long way. And they had defense. They were together. He did a tremendous job, but they couldn't get over the hump. And he did it with Mark Sanchez, which is what made it even stranger.
As we're now a week in, or and then some into training camps, obviously you haven't seen a whole lot, but when you look at the rookie head coaches, who are you the most interested in? Obviously, I know your ties to Clint Kubiak, but of all the rookie coaches, who are you the most interested to see how they do in year one?
Robert Saleh, because he was here for 6 or 7 years, first under Dom Capers. Then his last year here was with Gary Kubiak's first year in 2006. And Robert, he'll never do it, but the stories that he can probably tell you about Woody Johnson and his involvement would probably curl his hair if he had it. But I think Saleh's going to do a really good job. We know he's a great defensive coach, and he's got a former head coach as offensive coordinator, but people can't get impatient, and it's hard not to. Everybody wants Cam Ward to be Drake May and Saleh to be Mike Vrabel, and they go to the Super Bowl, but you have to be patient. I think if they win 6 games, Amy Adams Strunk be turning cartwheels. I heard Charles Davis say last week the division's up for grabs. I disagree with that. And I heard somebody else on the NFL radio talk about the Titans could win 8 games. If Robert Saleh wins 8 games, he should be coach of the year.
John, you talk about a lot of coaches. You've known a lot of coaches throughout your career. But when you, every time you talk about Robert Saleh, you have this excitement in your voice about him. What is it about Robert Saleh, John, that you like that's going to work well here in Nashville?
Well, I did not know Robert when he was here. He's so far down the totem pole, we never even talked to him. But, you know, Kyle Shanahan liked him. Kyle has shown that multiple times. Kyle has a great track record, like D'Amico Ryans. And Saleh is a great defensive coach. He proved it twice, before he went to the Jets and after he went back to the 49ers last season, when he did probably the best coaching job by an assistant coach in the NFL, considering the changes they've made on their defense and also the players they had lost because of the cap. And now he's got Brian Daboll. The key isn't going to be the defense. The key is going to be the offense, led by Ward in the running game and the offensive line. And I think this time next year, we'll be talking about Saleh helping the Titans become a playoff contender.
Boy, we would love that here in Nashville. John, it's Hall of Fame weekend that's happening. Is there one Hall of Fame speech that somebody gave that still resonates with you so deep and emotional?
It did, Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin's was incredible. Now, these guys don't do their own speeches. They have them done. But Mike's up there crying, telling his kids, do what, you know, don't do what I did. Because everybody knows he's a wild man. But his speech was unbelievable. And I keep thinking back to that one. One of the most, unbelievable Hall of Fame scenes. We're in there, we're writing on deadline, and all of a sudden, a senior senior inductee, Gene Eckerson, guard for the Cleveland Browns, he had Alzheimer's, and he was pushed out in a wheelchair by his 3,000-yard running backs he blocked for. Jim Brown, who never came to the Hall of Fame. Jim Brown, Leroy Kelly, and Bobby Mitchell were pushing his wheelchair.
Wow.
And I was on deadline. I'm like, whoa. I called my office, said, I'm changing my whole story. Jim Brown's here, and this scene is unbelievable. And the fact that Cleveland and Canton is a Browns town, and that they were all those great Browns players in the Hall of Fame, and that was, to me, the most emotional scene I've ever seen at Canton.
I love that. I go back, we all grew up Steeler fans in the 70s, but Bradshaw's speech about Webster and Stallworth and Swan was just one. If you grew up a Steeler fan and you love Bradshaw, that to me, that one always resonates, but there's so many great speeches that guys give up there at Canton.
they do every year, and there's somebody. And now I'm so glad they put a tougher time limit. You don't get a Ray Lewis who's up here preaching to a Sunday, to his Sunday church, and going on and on and on and sweating like crazy. And because those Hall of Famers, they don't like being outside sweating in their gold jackets. And even though they got air blowing on them, they always tell everybody, short, please, short, short,
right.
Short.
Right. I wish – I know they put him in, I think, a year or two after he passed away. But, my goodness, John, would I have loved to have heard Ken Stabler give a speech at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and if all of Kenny's old girlfriends had showed up, there wouldn't have been any room for any Hall of Famers to sit there.
Oh, I love it, man. The Hall of Fame this weekend, what do you think of this class with Drew Brees, Roger Craig, Larry Fitzgerald, Luke Kuechly, and Adam Vinatieri?
It's harder and harder. Next year, there's two or three guys that have to go in on the first ballot, and that hurts the guys who have had to wait, who are deserving, but you can't keep them out. You know, when you're like Adrian Peterson but Fitzgerald, we knew was a lot. Drew Brees was a lot. And I love that video where Brees asked Sean Payton to present him. That was very emotional. I still like those door knock videos when the player or coach does not know that he's in the Hall of Fame. A guy like Roger Craig's waited forever. The seniors are the ones like Carl Eller 1 year. They changed the rule. He was a senior. Then they changed it back, and he had one more year of eligibility, and he made it, and he was just crying like a baby. And those guys turned to mush. Some of the biggest jerks in history when they played turned to mush when they go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
It's going to be fun to watch, that's for sure. John, always appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, thank you very much, as always.